In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Welcome to the Really 007 podcast once more for our second foray into the James Bond songbook. You can find us and listen in on iTunes and Spotify, and we're on social media platforms, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Tonight, I am joined by regular contributor John Kell, who's been on pretty much all the episodes we've done so far. But we also welcome, for the first time, Mr. Glenn Standish. Good evening, both of you.
Good evening.
Good evening. Hi, it's good to be here.
It's good to have you, Glenn. Now, Glenn got in contact with the podcast after seeing us on Facebook, but he's got more of a sort of long-standing connection. Glenn actually went to school with the elder brother James, who mysteriously isn't on this podcast, in Cheltenham back in, what was it, the late 80s, early 90s, Glenn?
Early 90s. It was actually 1990, and I left in 1995. I think James actually left a bit earlier than me, if I recall. He didn't stick around.
No, he didn't, no.
And I'm back. Well, no, I do live in Poland now, but surprisingly, I'm actually in Cheltenham right now. I'm here to visit my mother. So I'm actually just down the road from this very same school where I first met James. So, yeah, wow. So it's a bit weird, isn't it? This is uncanny.
Absolutely amazing, yeah. Kismet.
Yeah, I know.
We were hoping to say, oh, glamorous European broadcast this evening, going out from Poland, but Cheltenham's nice, though. It's a lovely place.
Well, I am from Cheltenham. Well, I mean...
Glenn, off topic, there hasn't been a Bond film in Poland yet, has there?
Mm.
No, you're absolutely correct. No, but there has been a Polish Bond actress, Izabela Skorupka, of course. Is it Skorupka?
Yeah,
GoldenEye.
Yeah.
Wow.
She's Polish.
Yeah.
But you're right, it's never been filmed in Poland, and it bloody should be.
Yes, great.
Yeah, too right. No, no.
It's not a beautiful place. I mean, it was filmed in the Czech Republic for Casino Royale and a few others, I think, but never in Poland.
Yeah.
We were saying, John, weren't we? I think it is in the Man with the Golden Gun review, that Thailand sort of was opened up by the Bond world, and they did it a bit with Absolutely. India and Octopussy, but there's quite a few countries they haven't been to yet, and we'd like from some of the new Bonds them to go to somewhere they haven't been. And they keep sort of going to Venice, don't they? Keep going to Istanbul and London and Scotland, but Poland would be certainly one of them.
And the new one, Jamaica as well.
Yeah, yeah. I think they've done some filming in the Faroe Islands or something like that, I think I was saying. So that hopefully we'll get some sort of new look that we haven't seen before, like an ice palace.
Yeah. You know, but you've got, in Poland, you've got Krakow, haven't you? There'd be something lovely that you could do there. But is it Gdansk? Is it? I'm not going to pronounce it. Gdansk is the big
Gdansk
port as well.
Big seaport. I mean,
you could do something like the Cove Docks from You Only Live Twice at Gdansk or something like that.
Absolutely. But we've also got lots of beautiful castles, loads of castles and stuff. And, you know, I can see one of the villains hanging out at one of these castles.
Yeah.
Definitely.
I hope Purvis and Wade are listening.
Yeah, come on.
because they'll still be here.
And we'll be booking a trip right
there. Yeah, it's great to have you on, Glenn. In terms of your relationship with Bond growing up, I presume you watched them as a kid, did you?
Yeah, absolutely. I remember I was age 6 years old. It was 1983, so shit, that gives my age away. But it was my very first time I went and saw a James Bond film. And it was at the old Classic Cinema. That's actually, it was called the Classic Cinema, in Tunbridge Wells in Kent. And it was Octopussy in 1983. So Octopussy is, I wouldn't say it's in my top five, but it's definitely in my top 10 because purely because of, you know, nostalgic reasons. And, you know, I watched it recently on HBO again, and I love it. You know, it's, you know, it's got a lot of flaws, but a lot of good things about it as well. So that was my first, let's say, foray into James Bond. And I've been a fan of it. Growing up, yeah, Roger was. But then there was obviously Pierce Brosnan. I was never really a big fan of Pierce Brosnan. And then obviously Daniel Craig. But I started watching all of the James Bond films. Sorry, I know. John, are you a fan of Pierce Brosnan?
John especially.
Pierce Brosnan's my Bond. I grew up with Pierce Brosnan, and to this day, I will defend him and The World Is Not Enough till Kingdom Come.
Well, funny you mention The World Is Not Enough, because I actually, I've got a good story. I told Tom about this. So I actually gate crashed the press pit of the world premiere of World Is Not Enough, and I met with my friend Abby, one of my university pals, and we managed to gate crash. We got in there. I don't know how they allowed me in, because the only camera I had was a disposable Kodak. You remember those disposable Kodak cameras?
Yes.
Well, I had one of those.
I think I said I was
with the Daily Star. And I got into the bloody press corps. Yeah, and, you know, the likes of Boy George and Paul McCartney went past me. Judi Dench was there. And sadly, Desmond Llewellyn, literally a couple of weeks before he sadly died, was there as well. So I got to see him. But I saw Denise Richards. But the only person I failed to see, wait for it, was Pierce bloody Brosnan, because my friend Abby needed to go to time. So we left the press pit, went to go to the toilet, and they wouldn't let me back in. So so all I saw was his left hand waving from the balcony of the Odeon Leicester Square. But I did get to see a little Pierce. I know, gutted. Of course he was alive or not. And we must have missed him by minutes. I know.
That's a left hand more of Pierce Brosnan than I've ever seen, so fair play.
I know. Ironically, the ones who weren't in the press pit, you know, the mere commoners, should we say, got to see him completely, because, you know, they were opposite him and I was underneath, and I couldn't see because I was right under the balcony. So I just saw his left hand.
Is that possibly why you don't rate him as high?
It is a good story.
Because he didn't think he snubbed you?
Yeah. He snubbed me, exactly.
Right.
I'm not a fan of Pierce.
Well, Glenn, yeah, we did our own rankings on the podcast at the start of the year, the end of 2020, and there was a sort of Twitter poll as well, and they came up with everybody's rankings and joined them all together and worked out mathematically, whatever, a poll of polls, what the order was in terms of the best Bonds. I know you're a fan of Skyfall. What would be your, I don't know, top five Bond films, if you have them?
Yeah. I do. I mean, it's a difficult question, as you know, but I would say my number one, and it's everybody, you know, all fans' number one, I think, is on Her Majesty's Secret Service. I absolutely adore that film.
Brilliant.
Yes. John is going
excellent.
Crazy. Yeah, I'm a massive fan. Then I would probably be From Russia With Love.
Good.
Classic, yeah. You know, the whole scene on the Orient Express is just, you know, phenomenal. And, you know, even to this day, it's still brilliant. Then I would say probably, Skyfall is probably up there in the top five. Goldfinger as well.
Brilliant.
And I'm trying to think now. I'm losing it. Probably You Only Live Twice is pretty good as well. It's also up there.
Nice. In the
top five. Yeah. But definitely, you know, without a shadow of doubt, on Her Majesty's Secret Service. And I recently watched it a couple of days ago on HBO again. And we just bought a brand new TV, you know, one of these massive, 55-inch screen TV. And my God, you know, that film is over, well, it's over 50 years old now, and it was filmed in 1969, and you could still see the pores and stuff on the skin. You know, amazing, absolutely amazing
yes.
imagery. And, you know, it still stands to this day, I think, is an absolutely top draw Bond film. Everything about it, I love the music. I know we're going to be talking about that later. You know, I love the leading lady. And the ending. The ending is just, you know, it gets me every time. I always shed a tear or two when I watch that ending. Mm. And, you know, people diss George Lazenby, but I actually think, you know, I think he handled that scene, especially the end scene, very, very well for somebody who's, you know, who was just a model, you know, without any acting experience. I think, you know, brilliant. I couldn't imagine Sean Connery doing that, in my opinion.
Such a good point.
I completely agree with you, Glenn.
And then you got the music and the song at the end. Yeah, I'm just saying, you know, everything about it, you know, this, the music and the ending, it just gets to me, you know. And, you know, they shot the whole film on location in Switzerland. And actually, in a couple of months' time, I'm going to go to Piz Gloria and check it out. So I'm very excited about going to that location. Yeah. You know my favourite scene in on Her Majesty's Service? You know what my favourite scene is? It's when James Bond enters that guy's office and he's sitting there waiting for the safe to open.
Oh, yes.
And he pulls out a magazine, he starts reading the Playboy magazine, and his friend, the blonde guy, he's just there outside and he's putting the safe cracking device into that, you know, machine, and it goes up, you know, and the music is brilliant. No, that, for me, that is pure Bond, pure Bond.
Yeah, I completely, completely agree. Glenn, welcome to the podcast. You're a friend for life.
Absolutely.
We have...
thank you very much.
You know, firstly, anybody who's going to say that George Lazenby makes that film and that it wouldn't be the same if it was Sean Connery, you'll always get my backing with that 100%. It's all about that performance. I talk on numerous occasions to Tom and the rest of the team about how the music Gunbolt Safe is just some of the best music in the whole of Bond. You know, I'm with you all the way on this. This film is light years ahead of its time in terms of its filming and all the rest of it. And I know you said that it's quite obvious that everyone has this as number one and From Russia with Love as number two. There's a reason for it. It's because they're flipping brilliant. It's superb. Yeah.
Right. I think we have a very similar, we have similarities in terms of our taste, John. Definitely.
Yeah, there was one slight query I've got to make with it, Glenn. Mm-hmm. That's all right.
Yeah.
On Her Majesty's Secret Service is my number two. I need to ask you, because there's one certain James Bond that you didn't mention in this chat so far. What's your opinion on Timothy Dalton?
Oh, yes! I love Timothy Dalton.
Yay!
I'll say Living Daylights, or License to Kill is up there. You know, definitely. Sorry. No, I completely forgot. How could I forget about Tim? Tim, you know, he's all over. He's much better than, in my opinion, he's 100 times better than Pierce Brosnan. In my opinion, Pierce Brosnan's the weakest. And it's not really Pierce Brosnan's fault. I think he was really let down by the screenwriters and the scripts at the time. They were god-awful. Apart from GoldenEye was not too bad, but the others, come on. So, no, I'm basically Pierce Brosnan. You know, he's the weakest, in my opinion.
But you like...
But no, Timothy Dalton, no. I absolutely... When I was listening to your podcast with Anthony Stark, and he mentioned about that anecdote about Tim on the plane, about all the exercise he does. I thought that was brilliant.
Makes you love him even more.
Yeah.
Yes. And it just, you know, every time I watch, you know, see him on screen now, I always have that anecdote in my head.
We're going to talk about Honor Majesties tonight for a heck of a lot of the running time of this episode. We'll also talk about another film. We'll get to that, which you might have mentioned already. Not much Tim, I'm afraid, tonight, but I'm sure we'll have that another time, Glenn. Our second episode on the songs of James Bond focuses on four songs. So, you know, we'd like to give you one each, but because it's Honor Majesties, we're just going to say, what the heck, let's do all three from that. They, of course, embody what we think is one of the very best James Bond films. But Glenn is also, his choice not only was the on a Majesty's Secret Service, but he chose the first title song to win an Oscar. That's Skyfall. And we have reviewed Skyfall and we've talked about the song there, but it'd be very interesting to get a different perspective on the song and indeed some thoughts of everybody's again on the film. But we will start chronologically because I'm obsessed with doing that on this podcast, it seems. And John has selected, this is amazing, John. First of all, you have a very personal connection to the music of On a Majesty's Secret Service, don't you?
I certainly do, yeah. I feel very privileged to be the person who's allowed to talk about this music, the whole of it. When I first got into Bond and I was watching this and all the rest of it, I didn't know, because like downloadable music wasn't available then, so I did not know what the theme tune to On a Majesty's Secret Service was. So me as a naive 10-year-old lad was just like, oh, I was trying to make up tunes in my head with this phrase, On Her Majesty's Secret Service, you know. And when I heard what it was, I was like, oh, wow, this is totally different, this instrumental. And then the Louis Armstrong song came on. And I can't describe it, but even as like such a young lad, hearing that song, I just was like, this is one of the greatest songs ever written. I just knew straight away that this is, for as a love song, this hit me really hard. To the point that when I got married, my wife wanted to walk down the aisle to Songbird by Eva Cassidy, which, again, cracking choice, but I was allowed to do the outro music. So as you were my witness there, as you were a witness in the crowd there, Tom, I got married to We Have All the Time in the World. And I never told my wife about the ending of the film because it may have put her off. It may have put her off from letting me get married to that song. But yeah, I mean, we're going to go into the logistics of the song and what it means, everything. But this to me is a very, very personal song. Yeah.
Well, I totally agree with you, John. And I think it is now one of the more popular songs, isn't it, for weddings. Well, linking this into Adele, I went to, I think it was 10 years ago now, and nearly every wedding I seem to go to, everybody's first dance was, you know, the "Never mind, I'll find someone like you." And I was like, sorry, these lyrics aren't really appropriate, are they? For a first dance for a wedding? And I think at one of them, I even asked the bride, and I was like, oh, yeah, it's a nice song, but obviously, you know, the lyrics and that. Oh, I've never really listened to the lyrics. So there you go, hopeless.
Have you ever heard Skyfall being played at a wedding? I haven't, no.
A bit specific, aren't they, to the location, maybe?
Yeah, it's very specific. It's a specific song, very specific.
I prefer it, but anyway. Not to, we have all the time in the world, don't worry. To go back to On a Majesty's, I mean, Chris Goldie of this parish, he's absolutely obsessed with the film and everything about it. And he put it as his number one, along with you, Glenn. And I know, John, pretty much you did as well, apart from License to Kill. Must get that in.
Obviously. Yeah.
And Chris in particular is obsessed with it's the title instrumental. It's the first track we are bringing forward tonight. Oh. And that's his personal favorite. I mean, I could have chosen that as my favorite. I think it's probably the greatest piece of instrumental action music ever written, perhaps. I don't say that lightly because I'm obsessed with soundtracks. Mm-hmm. I'm obsessed with John Barry, and some of his action music is so good. Because often people think of him as the more the lush melodies, and nowadays all every action film has the same pulsating, you know, percussion and I don't know, digitized synchronizers. But John Barry can do action without needing all that. I know in the last one he did, Living Daylights, he got a bit of synth on, but the melodies were still there and it made it even better for Necros. Yeah, for Necros is an amazing theme. Mm. In fact, though, that links because I was going to say, John Barry, this was sort of almost pioneering the On a Majesty's theme tune because this is one where he first used more electronic instruments, including the Moog synthesizer. And I know Chris is obsessed and I think he's got one or like a mini version of it. So it's a bit more of an aggressive sound, isn't it, than the ones that had come before. Because if you think about it, we just had Young and Live Twice is so sweeping and beautiful. It's lovely. But this is an altogether different beast. And he said, I have to stick my oar in the musical area double strong to make the audience try and forget they don't have Sean. So I think that was one of the main reasons he did that. And he wanted the music to sort of fill in the gaps. If you were sort of thinking, oh, heck, there's no Sean here, I've got to really be on my A game to make. And he said, to be Bondian beyond Bondian. So this guy knew what he was doing. He wasn't just he was a genius, but he wasn't just a genius coming up with random music and, oh, you can have this if you want this for the thing. He really thought about it, fitting it to the actors and the style of the film.
It's testament to this song that this film feels so Bondian, and yet the Bond theme tune is only played once throughout the whole film. It's testament that you have an incredible piece of music here that is so action focused, and yeah, straight away that's James Bond, that's on Her Majesty's Secret Service, and it replaces the Bond theme barring the Pitts Gloria fight at the end, and it works so amazingly well. I was trying to listen through today and I was thinking, why does this work so much? And what I think it is the rhythm section that I think does it.
The Eon film, the rhythm section.
Yeah, not the Eon film. Especially on the remastered version, you really hear the bass line coming through underneath the Moog synthesizer. And then you've basically got quite a rattly, snary thing going on. What it does is that when you go to the title credit scene and you see the Sands of Time, what that music does is it creates a picture of Sands of Time in your head because of, like, it feels like time ticking because of the rhythm that's going on. And yeah, then, and that to me is nothing that we've seen from Barry beforehand. What we've seen is the more kind of whimsical, beautiful strings of, say, You Only Live Twice, or the big brass from like the Thunderball or Goldfinger. But then what Barry does on top of putting this amazing rhythm section is he puts classic Barry horns and brass over the top of it. And what you get is like the best of Barry. Because you've got the classic Barry, but you have got this whole new innovation going on as well. And then how he just changes the octaves throughout the song. And then in the second time, you get the little glockenspiel going, and all that. And just these little bits here and there. This is a sensational piece of music. That is all I can say. I could go on all day, but I won't, because I'm sure both you and Glenn would love to just wax lyrical about this as well.
Well, I'm a big fan of the opening credits and the intro. I think I completely agree, John, with what you're saying. But I think also the actual main credit sequence itself. We mentioned about the timer, you know, the sand timers. But seeing the previous films as well, you know, I know why they did that, because they wanted to try, obviously, make a clear connection between Sean Connery and the new Bond. But it does work, and it really, you know, the music really lends itself as well to the actual imagery that you see from the previous Bond films. And I think, you know, probably the best ever opening credits, really. And you don't have these scantily clad women like you do in the other, in all the other ones. You know, it actually works so well. I think, you know, I mean, there are women in it.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think it is. Yeah, of course. But I think, you know, everything about it is just, it's far superior, I think, than any of the other main credit sequences I've ever seen. And it's the only one that's instrumental.
Yeah, I mean, with...
And there's something about that.
With it being instrumental, I think they did... I think John Barry originally wanted to, of course, then the producers wanted him to write a song with the name on Her Majesty's Secret Service, but yeah, I mean, the title was obviously the big problem, trying to get that in. And they thought the only way they could do that is if it was like written operatically, said in the style of Gilbert and Sullivan, which obviously wouldn't be very Bond. And even Leslie Bricus, who'd done some of the lyrics, of course, for Goldfinger, and You Only Live Twice, I think he also did. He was going to do some of the lyrics for that, but it was director Peter Hunt, who, my word, we owe an awful lot to him. We'll talk about him later.
Oh, yeah.
He's the one who allowed the instrumental title theme. And, of course, he was the editor back then, wasn't he? And the first, Doctor No is instrumental, of course, the title for that. And then from Rush With Love is the instrumental of the theme going into the Bond theme, which was like, here I am, John Barry, I'm you know, give me this theme tune, even if Monty Norman wrote it, but my word, I'll make it something special.
Oh. I've completely forgot that Dr. No was also instrumental. You're right. You forgot. Yeah. But that's because they obviously haven't got into the rhythm of things.
Yes, at that point.
You know,
they weren't concentrating.
Yeah, you're right. I always thought there was only one, and I always thought it was on Her Majesty's Secret Service, but you're absolutely right. You know, and it was the Three Blind Mice song, wasn't it?
Yes.
With Dr.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
I think
that's right. Yeah.
Three Blind Mice in a Row.
That's the one.
Going back to what you said as well, John, in terms of the use of the Bond theme, the actual Bond theme, the Vic Flick on the guitar, that one is obviously used when he's sliding around, isn't it, in the Peace Gloria battle. But that had been used, I think that specific cue had been used throughout all of them up until this one, and it's never been used since. And what they've done, which I think is much better, is just incorporate the Bond tune melody into the music of the film. I think we say on the Man with the Gun, the Gun episode, you know, you've got like an oriental version of it, and it just lends itself so well. And John Barry himself must have come up with so many different arrangements. So it doesn't have to just be action. Sometimes it's like for a mystery cue. Sometimes it's a bit more, I don't know, subterfuge. And it's just so well done by John Barry. In this film, in On Her Majesty's, the other times it's slightly used are right at the beginning on the beach, but that isn't the Vic Flick one. It's slightly.
No.
And then at the end credits, it goes into the amazing new version of the Bond theme, doesn't it? With the sort of synth. And it's like a really fast version of it.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, I don't know. I don't want to sound too critical of it, but personally, because of just what's just happened and the heartbreaking thing, it does seem to come out of nowhere. It does seem a bit left field. Like, you know, James Bond will return. Everyone's got tears in their eyes. They've just got the little instrumental that we have all the time. Like, all right, calm down. But it is great. You know, it sounds just amazing, doesn't it?
Yeah, I just love this so much.
Everything you guys are saying, I completely agree with you.
Yeah, that's great.
Good. That's great. I also really love, when I was listening through today, what's the song called? Ski Chase. I absolutely love Ski Chase on the soundtrack. Yeah, how it just starts with that just beautiful, like, whimsical string music there, and you see those shots of him, Bond and Tracy skiing, and I mean Christopher Nolan has been so inspired by those shots, there's no doubt about it. And then all of a sudden you just see Blofeld coming out with his goons and straight away the theme kicks in and you just know you're going back into it, and it's just like, this is sensational. I mean, that scene is so perfectly shot. And yet, however perfectly shot it would be, and however great the action would be, it would be not half as good if it did not have that music playing in the background.
Absolutely.
And that's testament to how special this piece of music is.
It's the first time that there's been another action theme other than the Bond theme as well, really. So it's like you're creating a piece of music that is almost... But I'm glad it only stays in this film, because it is so personal to the film, isn't it? A bit like 007 is used as an action theme in other films.
Yeah.
Yes.
Dun, 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 dun. Last used in Moonraker. So it's a bit unusual that that's never come back. Maybe it's a little bit too whimsical and old-fashioned now. I thought they might, maybe No Time to Die, there's a chance Hans Zimmer might incorporate it, but do an updated version. I don't know. But he, to be fair, Hans Zimmer, yeah. I'd rather him just do his own Hans thing, because he's a good enough composer, isn't he?
Yeah.
Whether he will do.
He's good.
Yeah.
But I want John Barry to come back from the dead. Come back.
It's a shame, isn't it?
Because we need David more John Barry.
Yeah, David Arnold is... He tried, didn't he? Yeah, he was trying to do John Barry, wasn't he? And succeeding on the main part.
Yeah, I'd agree.
Casino Royale score recently, and it's pretty much spot on, really. And it doesn't sort of... I know some people aren't as into his more action themes with the whole synth and all that drum and bass thing going on. To be fair, that's of its time, whereas the synths in On Her Majesty's the theme tune were of the time, but they just happen to... They don't sound dated at all, do they? They just sound so fresh.
Definitely. Absolutely.
If you're enjoying Really 007, why not follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram? Look us up at Really 007 Pod. If you do not, you will be shot!
We could wax lyrical for the Honor Majesty's theme and the score in general, of course. And we will eventually get around to reviewing the film, and it'll take months probably, won't it? Because we've so much to say about it, and love the film so much. But I just thought you might like to hear a slightly different version of the theme tune. Lens covering his ears.
Yeah.
I've had to take an earphone out.
This is the OHMSS for headbangers version. The theme tune.
I quite like it, actually.
I'm not saying it will be appropriate for the film. But it's basically the music is so good, it's versatile. Anyway, there you go.
What I'll say about that is it's difficult to do covers of instrumental music because So what I will say, fair play for putting their own stamp on that. And, you know...
A for effort.
Yeah, great effort. You know, it's not my cup of tea, but if I was into heavy metal and I heard that and I love James Bond, I'd be like, yeah, that's great. You know, fair play.
It's probably the one which could be the most heavy metal, you know, it could be sort of adapted to it. I know we've heard a few weird versions of the theme songs so far in our reviews, like The World Is Not Enough. We heard that operatic version. I don't think you're that keen on that, John. I don't really remember that.
The one that sounded like the lady in the church singing.
What
I'm going to say about Honor Majesty's Secret Service theme tune is, listen, guys, no, it was written 52 years ago, and it's still absolutely incredible, and it's still just completely, you know, it stood the test of time. Think about it. It's powerful. It's amazing. Yeah. And, you know, I don't get tired of it, and it's 52 years old. You know, that's amazing. That's what's amazing about it. And the film as well.
So good.
The film doesn't really tie either.
Because it accompanies it. Yeah. I remember, I think I might have mentioned this on one of the previous episodes, but I played the piano at school and I got gradually worse and worse. But anyway, to the point when I just wasn't practicing enough. But I think it was probably Mr. Easton, my teacher, who's sadly no longer with us, great teacher. I think he was probably getting fed up and he could tell that I was losing interest. So he brought in the James Bond book of all the Bond themes on the piano, and obviously my interest peaked and I suddenly started playing the piano a bit more because he was obviously like, oh, well, he's not going to go anywhere with this, might as well have fun while we're still at school. So for the last maybe year or two of my school piano lessons, we just played the Bond themes on the piano, and he was obsessed with All Time High. That was his go-to one, which is quite unusual, isn't it? People don't really rate that one. But in terms of, because of course it's on the piano, the instrumental is lovely. But I was just obsessed with doing Honor Majesty's, and the chords. I mean, my mum's, she's classically trained pianist and a music teacher, and I got her to play some of it recently, and the chords are so well written, so complicated. If you think of that opening, dun, 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 da, da, da. It's in all sorts of different keys and, you know, flats and I can't remember what key it's in now, but it's incredibly difficult to learn. If you're sight reading, I'm telling you, you know, there's about, you're using every single finger on your hands and doing it quickly, and then it goes into the main theme, and I think it's in a different key perhaps than the main theme, but just that opening is absolutely incredible music.
I mean, it sounds like it's a mixolydian key.
Yeah.
is into, it definitely sounds like it goes into those funky notes, and the start is just sensational, isn't it? And like, even, you know, even now, even Bond songs that I'm not a massive fan of, say Another Way to Die, they still take that inspiration from having that like couple of bars of massive bombastic intro, but yet, however good they are, none of them touch the first few bars of Honor Majesty's.
It's just musical perfection, isn't it? I've got,
really is.
I'm not sure who wrote this actually, but it's been described as one of the best title cuts, a wordless, mood-driven monster suitable for skiing at breakneck speed or dancing with equal abandon.
Yeah,
how good, that really sums it up, doesn't it?
Oh, definitely.
If anyone's been skiing, this is what I've when I have been skiing, this is what I have in my mind always.
Yeah.
We will move on to the second song in our James Bond songbook for the evening. And we're sticking with Honor Majesty's now. Before we get to the most beautiful song ever written, we will do We Have All the Time in the World. No, I'm joking. We will do, the next one we will do is Do You Know How Christmas Trees Are Grown? Okay, it's not Christmas when we're recording this, and it's the sort of the one Bond Christmas connection there is, really, isn't it? Not just the snow and obviously Blofeld with his Christmas presents and all that. But this song.
And Denise Richards.
Oh, of course. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. Yeah. Christmas in Turkey. I keep saying that. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, this is the only Christmas song in the James Bond songbook. And if you think, how on earth John Barry in this time, he's not only done this theme music, they've actually written three songs. Now, you'll say to me, no, there's only two. There's only Do You Know How Christmas Trees Are Grown? We Have All the Time in the World. There was actually a third song that was called The More Things Change that didn't end up on the finished film. And that was written as well with Hal David doing the lyrics to all of them.
Wow.
It appeared as the B-side on the Nina single of the Do You Know How Christmas Trees Are Grown? And then John Barry also put an instrumental version of it on his 1970 LP. So he was doing his own album then, called Ready When You Are, JB. Yeah, so he also did one with Nina singing. Let's play a little bit of this one. Another new John Barry song then. Instantly Barry's. I'm not sure why it didn't end up. I mean, maybe there's probably just too much great music. So.
My hand and we will be part of one another, you and me.
Still got that slightly mysterious Blofeld, you know, the sort of psychedelic feel to it, hasn't it?
The more things change, the more
nice chord. Love that. It's like almost the harpsichord that he uses, isn't it? It's so nice.
Like the ocean and the shore.
Interesting.
Wow, that's that. Yeah, really interesting.
Whimsical.
Something new.
I could see that.
John Barry lives.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what we're talking about. I could see that in something like From Russia With Love, that song.
Yeah.
I don't...
Because he didn't do the title song, did he? Matt Monro sung, it was Lionel Bart, wasn't it, who wrote the title song. Yeah. Well, that's a bonus song.
Yeah, it's interesting.
But Nina was the woman who sung that, and of course she sung Do You Know Where Christmas Trees Are Grown? She's just known as Nina. She's called Nina Moller, but she's still alive, and she's now known as Baroness Van Pallant. So there you go. she and her husband. Yeah, it's not bad, is it? Yeah. Yeah, she and her husband were a successful duo. I didn't know this. They had hits across Europe with sort of folk and calypso songs, including, I mean, it's very babyish, Mary's Boy Child and Little Donkey.
So she loves Christmas.
She loves Christmas,
basically.
Yeah, she does, yeah. So maybe that's what John Barry saw in her, I don't know. They divorced, and this is awful. Frederick, her ex-husband, and his new wife were both murdered, both shot dead in the Philippines in 1974. Ironically, quite near to where they were filming The Man with the Golden Gun. Nina, do you know how Christmas trees are grown? It's John Barry's music, Hal David's lyrics, and I absolutely love it. It's not, you do hear the actual song, don't you? And you hear the instruments
sometimes,
but I just look again. You mentioned the horns before. The horns in the chorus are just absolutely beautiful. I love it.
Is that the song playing when they're having the ski fight and the guy falls off the cliff and you can hear the music down in the village?
Yes.
Yes.
What a shot that is as well. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Brilliant, isn't it?
Yeah, incredible.
Oh, I don't want to dwell on it too much because I don't want to feel Christmassy right now until it's Christmas.
Well, it's funny you say that.
Yeah.
It's funny you mention that Christmas because tomorrow I'm actually going to have my Christmas Day dinner because
really?
I couldn't. Yeah, because I'm here with my mother and I couldn't come over from Poland for Christmas because, with coronavirus, they actually cancelled the flight at the last minute. So I decided to postpone Christmas and I'm having it tomorrow instead with my mum.
Oh, look.
So there you go.
Are you going to whack on a bit of Dino and John Barry?
We're gonna have a Christmas Day dinner and we're going to give each other presents. I haven't given my mum her present yet, so there you go.
Oh, lovely. Very nice.
That's so nice. Yeah.
So it's Christmas still.
This song. Let's talk about this song. Let's get it on. This song, I vividly remember hearing it the first time I watched the film. There's that shot of when he's cacking his pants and he's sat with the hood up trying to hide from Spectre, and then Tracy ice skates in and it looks up and you hear Do You Know Where Christmas Trees Are Grown in the background, and I remember hearing it then, and I have always associated this song with that shot of Tracy just looking up and smiling at him.
So
iconic. And yeah, it always melts my heart, and for that reason alone I will always love this song. I have to confess that when I put this on in the car, my wife is like, who doesn't like James Bond and doesn't get the context of this or anything. She's like, what are you listening to?
She's like, put on The More Things Change. Come on, John.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Oh, what a shame. Well, I think it's beautiful. Yeah. Well, we move on, John, to the... I mean, it's almost emotional just talking about We Have All the Time in the World, because it's just forever have those connotations. I know the weird thing was it wasn't a hit at the time, and it was only a big hit when it was using that Guinness advert. And now that Guinness advert wasn't really harrowing, was it? So it's a bit of a shame. I remember James, in fact. James, when he got it on single, and that actually, because maybe on Her Majesty's, we didn't have it on video at that time. So that might have been the first time I'd heard it. Oh, well, it wouldn't have been the first time, but it really brought it fresh again. And it was like a number, I think James, it was number three, wasn't it?
Yeah,
James, massive fan of the song, and, well, James Bond as well, of course. But it's one of these iconic songs now. Barry composed the song with lyrics from Hal David again, and, of course, Louis Armstrong's vocal is just incredible, isn't it? And he was very ill at the time, wasn't he? So he was so well, actually, so, that he couldn't do the trumpet part, which, of course, was his main instrument. So that had to be done by somebody else. And he died, didn't he, a couple of years later, actually. And it was done in one take, amazingly. Just these guys are just geniuses, aren't they? It's so good.
I'm just saying, you're saying that these guys are geniuses, but it's just so lucky and amazing that James Bond producers, you know, can get them. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, that's true, yeah.
Yeah, it's a good point.
Now they sort of choose whoever's been number one and down with the kids, don't they? Yeah. It's Billie Eilish. I mean, I'm not saying she's bad or not talented. She's so young, isn't she? I mean, Louis Armstrong was in his 60s, wasn't he? But she was, what, 18 or something?
Yeah.
Anyway.
I didn't know if I was going to share this at this point. I thought, do I save this bit for the actual film? But I am going to share it because I do associate it with this song. When I was 11 year old and I watched On Her Majesty's Secret Service for the first time, I had absolutely no idea what was going to happen at the end of the film. Whew. And honestly, when I saw what happened and the film ended, I was genuinely dumbfounded to the point, because all I'd watched beforehand was this formula of James Bond beating the baddie and getting the girl. And then to watch a film where the baddie drives away and he murders the girl absolutely shook me to the core as an 11-year-old, in terms of, like, because this was just not the happy ending that every other James Bond film I've ever watched was. And it affected me so much that I did not watch Honor Majesty's Secret Service again till I was 19 years old.
Word.
It, honestly, it's silly to say
no,
this,
no.
But I'm just being honest. I couldn't handle it. It affected me so much. I couldn't handle it because I was like, it hit me so hard that this happened, because I had bought so much into this love story. And the main reason, and I know there's a few main reasons, but one of the main reasons is this song. Yeah. And the montage,
yeah, the montage
that they have,
yeah.
The montage is stunning. It doesn't touch the montage in Majesty's, the Casino Royale one. But then I love, like, when he's talking to Draco and you've got this amazing instrumental version and he's telling the story about how he had fallen in love and with this English girl. And honestly, the emotion that is pouring out of this music is outrageous. And you get to the song and, I mean, you've got this iconic voice of Louis Armstrong, and the lyrics are so simple, and yet work so well. But then you have got these amazing strings going through. So he's like, "We have all the time in the world." Do 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 do.
Yeah.
Do 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 do. And that just goes up, and then you bring in Spanish guitar. From
yeah.
Somewhere.
Yeah.
I mean, like, where's that come from? And I wonder if they put that in because they were thinking, some of this film's based in Portugal, we're on an Iberian theme, why don't we try and put some of that in? And it works brilliantly. How it just runs up to what an iconic brass line. Oh, do 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 do. And you just know that you are in cinematic heaven when you are watching this film. And then the killer point is that the film finishes with James Bond saying, "We have all the time in the world." And that heartbreaking little, like, piano-y thing, or that little exit music of the score going through. No piece of music has ever affected me in a James Bond film like this has. And for that reason, I adore A View to a Kill. I adore it. I adore Live and Let Die. But for the reasons of how this affected me as a person, I could never choose another song as my favourite. I don't know why, but when I was given the choice to have a song as my outro for my wedding, this was the only choice for me. And I know that some people think that's a bit messed up because she dies. But like,
the sentiment,
it's the idea.
What the lyrics are about, sentiment. They're not meant. It was intended as a, this is it. This is my love. I'm leaving. It's all over.
That's it.
Life's done.
He's bought it. And I've bought it 100%. I'm there. And the love that comes through this song. And I'm like, that's how I want to start my marriage. That's why I want to start my wedding. I want to get out to this song. I want to believe that I have all the time in the world with my wife and Rachel. Sorry, I know I'm getting so soppy. I can't love this song enough. I adore it. And I'm going to stop there because I may get a tear in my eye if I carry on.
I think that's the only downside with it for me, is that I'm so emotionally attached to it. It's so much, it's almost like a chore to listen to it, because I can't listen to it without thinking of the you know, Bond and Tracy, and just everything going through her mind. It can't ever be background music. It can't ever be easy listening. It's just got so much impact with it. And even the horn line is almost like plaintive, isn't it? It's almost not doom-mongering because of what's going to happen, but haunting, isn't it? It's haunting.
Yeah, it's so haunting.
So I've got some touring gingerbread in my mouth at the moment.
Very Christmassy.
You caught me off guard. No, I completely agree. It's just so haunting, and it goes so brilliantly with all the imagery in the film. And I've got one other, I just want to say about On Her Majesty's Secret Service, I have got one other favourite scene. And it's the scene where they're just about to be attacked by the helicopters, Blofeld and Tracy are in the Piz Gloria, and basically she's reciting that poem. And, you know, they actually shot that in the mountains, so the interior is actually there in the mountains. So when you see the exterior and you see the mountains behind, it's not some, you know, projector.
Yeah.
Extra screen or anything. It's actually the helicopters are actually approaching, and it's beautiful. And you see that 1969, 52 years later, incredible, absolutely incredible footage. But that poem is phenomenal, and it reminds me of Judi Dench's poem as well in Skyfall. There you go, his little link.
Yeah.
And I think they got inspired by that. No. That's why they added that that poem in, you know, when she's giving that speech. And that's also very powerful for me as well. I think that's a great scene. But that's moving away. That's moving into Skyfall territory.
No. Like I said, I mean, I know you had it at your wedding, John, but in a 2005 poll, it was found to be the third most popular love song played at weddings. I assume they mean as a wedding. I don't know. It's not really a first dance song, is it, maybe? Like you say, you had it as you were leaving? Yeah, which seems a bit more, well, it's even more harrowing, but...
Goodness
me. Yeah. On this film, you've already had one of the most amazing action themes ever, and now you've got perhaps the most beautiful love song in the entire Bond canon. There's been loads of covers of it. One of them, can you link to Daniel Craig? I don't think anyone would be able to do this. No one will be able to do it. I'll just answer it. Right. We're going to do an episode on the Shaken and Stirred James Bond project, the David Arnold one. And of course, he did the version of On Her Majesty's Theme, which was superb. He did that version of that. But on the album, the version of We Have All the Time in the World is by Iggy Pop. And the Iggy Pop version was played over the end credits of a film I think I might have heard about it at the time. A thriller starring Adrian Brody and Keira Knightley called The Jacket. And a little known actor was also in it called Daniel Craig. So there you go. And that version was used on the end credits. All these things were gearing Daniel to the top job. Amongst the countless covers when I was looking through this, the one I found was by The Specials. They're more ska, aren't they? More of a ska band. This one, it's like a live version.
Two lovely men.
It's a little bit more raw, I think, than some of the other versions. But decent.
I mean, it's well played. I think because it's too fast, it's fast.
It is, yeah.
It's got a rhythm section to it, and it takes the emotion out of the song by making it faster. Fine, but having said that, no vocal is ever going to compare with Louis Armstrong either. That's the other issue with it. Yeah.
Well, there we go. as much as I'd love to discuss Honor Majesty's forever and ever, we will now move on to Skyfall, which is what Glenn chose as one of his, well, if not his favourite, one of his favourite James Bond songs. And like I say, we have reviewed the film and we spent quite a bit of time on that song and some of the other covers of that. Glenn, why would you say it's one of your favourite Bond songs?
I honestly, hand on my heart, I think there hasn't been a decent Bond song since John Barry's and, you know, The Living Daylights, in my opinion. And I'm sorry, I know you love License to Kill. I don't know or should I say License to Kilt, because that's what she says in the song.
Yeah, yeah.
Sorry, I can't sing. But seriously, there has not been a decent Bond song, and throughout the whole of Pierce Brosnan, and even, dare I say it, Tina Turner's Goldeneye, it had its moments, and I know it was written by Bono and The Edge, you know, amazing, but really, in my opinion, there has not been a good Bond song since, I know this is a big statement, since when I first heard Skyfall, I was absolutely blown away, and, you know, usually it takes me several listenings, repeated listenings of a Bond song to actually start to feel it, start to get into it. And to be honest, I'm still trying to get into bloody Billie Eilish's song at the moment. but for me, Skyfall blew me away after the very first playing. It just completely blew me away. I mean, the lyrics are rubbish, but I mean, what do they even mean? Skyfall is where we start, 1,000 miles and poles apart. I mean, what does that even mean? But it's the way the music, the melody and the way that Adele, you know, belts out the lyrics, it, for me, blows me away. I think it's a superior song for a very good, superior Bond film, in my opinion.
You're very passionate about this, Glenn, and I've never heard anyone say, oh, that's rubbish or anything like that. I think the main complaint with it has just been, it is deliberately a throwback, isn't it, to those John Barry efforts. I sometimes feel that if you're trying too hard to make it sound Bond, like Live and Let Die came out and that was like nothing that had ever been done before, mm-hmm. but that's now seen as a very, very James Bond song. But it was nothing like John Barry's ones.
You can argue they've always been trying to, follow Shirley Bassey. You know, I mean, look at Garbage with World Is Not Enough. They have been trying to follow her footsteps. But for me, Skyfall is its own entity. Yes, you know, Adele is trying to be Shirley Bassey, but at the same time, the song is very different. The melody is different. You could argue Tina Turner was doing the same with Goldeneye. They're all bloody trying to do the same. apart from Casino Royale was one was a bit different, and obviously Quantum of Solace, they were different. But, I mean, look at that awful one. What was it? Sam Smith. Bloody hell, that was god-awful. Wow. God-awful. And what happened to Radiohead?
Awful song.
Radiohead. They should have bought bloody Radiohead.
I found it funny that, was it Radiohead, they sound very Bond, some of their songs. I know it was Pulp, wasn't it? Pulp submitted one.
Yes, they did.
Tomorrow Never Dies, I think. Yeah. And most of their songs sound very Bond, but their song for Tomorrow Never Dies didn't sound very Bond. It's like the one-off that didn't, but yeah, and I know, yeah, the Radiohead, I think people think it's better than it was because the Sam Smith one was so bad. Let's not waste time on that, this is depressing me. It's partly, again, because of the film it's associated with, isn't it? And that does help with all these. If you really like the film, then you've got better associations with the song.
Yeah, I think one of the main issues with the Sam Smith song as well that I have is the fact that he came out and said it took me 10 minutes to write.
Ugh.
And it's like, well, if you're going to say that, make sure that you've got yourself an absolute hit. You know what I mean? Because otherwise it's just going to sound that it's lazy. And basically, it's the Earth song,
and
not a very good version of the Earth song, followed by some awful falsetto nonsense, and then a really run-of-the-mill generic brass line that is basically just one note. It's just one note off the Bond theme.
It's so bad.
It's so... The word I describe that song as is lazy. It's a lazy song.
Yeah. But it's lazy song, but also completely lazy film as well. So, you know, both of them go together.
Oh,
I think, you know, Radiohead was a great song, And, you know, it would be let down because it was a shit film. So I popped in the French, but it was, you know, the perspective was Bond by numbers at its best. And, I'm sure you've probably already, you know, moaned about and complained about Spectre for in a previous podcast. I'm not sure.
Keep moaning.
Yeah, it was Bond by numbers. And so, to be honest, it was justice to have a shit song, in my opinion. lazy song, lazy.
Fair enough.
You know, just being pure lazy.
I've not thought about that. Are there any Bond songs which, we love most of the Bond films, but are there any songs which you think are better than the films they're in?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Skyfall.
Diamonds Are Forever. Pure class song. I don't massively dislike Diamonds Are Forever as a film, but that song, there is, an amazing bass line going on in the second verse from it. But the vocals and everything... That is a classy song.
Yeah.
And it doesn't fit with the tone of the film. That's all I say. I just think that song speaks of the class of diamonds and it brings, and you know, and all that's associated with it. And it just seems, it's a shame to me that the film doesn't follow that kind of way and goes down a very different kind of way. Because if you think about, like, when I think of Diamonds Are Forever, I think of the sleaziness, especially in terms of Las Vegas and this, like, it's quite a dirty setting.
Yeah.
It doesn't bring the class that this song comes through.
It is sort of a camp icon in a way. I'm not saying the song itself is camp. We'll discuss this with License to Queer, of course, in our review.
Obviously,
in detail, yeah. I'm sure. But yes, it's one of those. Diamonds Are Forever seems to be by a mile everyone's second favourite Shirley Bassey song, doesn't it? Moonraker never gets a look, and I absolutely love that song. I think that's a beautiful, beautiful John Barry melody, and I hope I'll get to talk about that another day. Well, yeah, well, there you go, mate. If you think that, but that there's another one then. But the film was far more popular than the song was, though. Weirdly,
one of my favorite Bond songs is Nobody Does It Better. I think it's pure class. Quite melodramatic. You probably could say it's a bit cheesy as well, but it's just one of those Bond songs I absolutely love. I think Carly Simon is amazing. And I think the film is good, but I think the song's better, in my opinion.
Yeah, well, right. Spy Love Me, sort of, I grew up with it thinking that everyone thought it was an absolute class, you know, like possibly in your top, everyone's top five. And I think it is on that poll we saw recently. It was the highest Roger Moore one.
Yeah.
But it's, I don't know, when you speak to individuals, particularly Bond nuts, they don't seem to quite rate it. Just going back to Skyfall, so it was written obviously by Adele with her regular collaborator Paul Epworth, who also produced it. It was an obvious choice in the sense that she was probably the most popular singer in the planet, never mind most popular British singer. And Skyfall does have a very We Love England feel. And, it was at the absolute peak of the Olympics, of course, had just gone on. And, you know, it was a time when everyone loved being British before all... Before everything went bad, maybe in the next few years afterwards with one or two things. But, I won't say any more on that, yeah. But, yeah, it just sort of got that real, we love Britain and we were really proud of it. And it was an obvious choice, but like you say, with Honour Majesty's, picking that as your favourite Bond song or Bond theme, just because it's obvious doesn't mean it isn't a good choice. And I think they thought we would love to have her. And she hardly released any. She releases like an album every 5 years. So to get a single in between her massive albums was another major coup. And it meant, well, we know everyone's going to be swarming around this song. So you're almost winning before it starts. But with that, I suppose there might have been a bit of extra pressure for it to be a good song. It's a great epic Bond song, isn't it?
Yes. I mean, my favourite part is just towards the end when the backing singers come in and they sing, When It Crumbles, and, you know, and they repeat When It Crumbles, and then she sings We Will Stand Tall, and they repeat We Will Stand Tall. I just love that bit, you know. It's just, you know, for me, it really gets to me, and I can hear it again and again and again. I can listen to it multiple occasions, and it doesn't bore me, which is, I can't say about that for any of the other new Bond films in the last 20 or 30 years. I can't say that. For me, they've all been absolute rubbish songs.
If only John Barry was still alive.
Yeah, Skyfall just stands out above the rest of them for me, you know, the song, definitely.
Do you think part of that is because the pre-title sequence is really, really visually arresting, isn't it? And sometimes they work a bit better and grab you with them. To be honest, I think the Daniel Craig pre-title sequences have possibly been one of the strongest bits. I mean, Casino Royale is a fantastic one, isn't it? And Skyfall, and Spectre's good, isn't it? Yeah.
Spectre's great, but then the rest of the film is awful.
Yeah. You get a topless Daniel Craig, though. I'm not sure I'd approve of that in the title sequence. and the tentacles around him, yeah. But the Skyfall one, it's got loads of visual clues to the film, hasn't it? And silver and these stags and graves and skulls and all that.
Yes.
It's terrific.
Yes, yes. And it's a good film. You know, I'm going to stand with John and I'm going to agree with John.
Yeah,
Skyfall is definitely my top five. Where does it fit with you, John? In your top five or top ten?
Was it? At this moment in time, it's top 10.
Okay.
It was top five. It was number four. I was saying this the other day, actually. The reason is because I think it sets an incredible first impression. It looks phenomenal. It's so grand scale. It looks like they've thrown the kitchen sink at it. And I think they do that with the song as well. I think the song, they are really trying to throw kitchen sink at going back to a big song. And I love it. I'm a big fan of the song. I was defending the song in the review. It's a really good song. Yes, I agree. The lyrics are basic, but it does what it needs to do. And especially when it succeeds Another Way to Die, which is a mess. I think that this is a real conscious effort to go back to what they know. Skyfall as a film is brilliant, got a great villain and all the rest of it. I do think it has diminishing returns on separate watches, whereas I think Casino Royale gets better with every watch. I do think Skyfall suffers. So I would probably have Skyfall at 7 or 8 at the moment. Okay. Still a cracking bottom film, don't get me wrong. But, you know, it's
for me, you mentioned it looks great, and that's because what's his name? Is it Roger Deakins?
Yeah.
The cinematographer, absolutely incredible cinematography. Some of the best ever, in my opinion. Especially the scenes where he's running across the Scottish moor, and you see the red orange glow of the sky burning behind him. You know?
Beautiful.
And when he gets on the ice, it is just absolutely beautiful, and the music as well. By what's his name?
He did Thomas Spectre Newman
as well. Yes, very good. I mean, obviously that's Sam's director, Sam.
Mendes.
Mendes.
Yeah. Crazy choice, isn't it? Really, but
absolutely.
Beautiful soundtrack and great cinematography. So you know, I think it does well and definitely top 10, and for me top 5. But definitely. I think it's a great film.
It is a great film. I agree.
It did come after as well, because Casino Royale was so well received, and then Quantum was like, oh dear.
Yeah.
They're not messed up. So
it's Quantum's not bad.
I don't hate it as much as everybody else, but it's that usually comes pretty near the bottom of everyone's, you know, rankings of Bonds, as does Spectre. So it's almost like good, bad. And then we're thinking No Time to Die. No.
Have you seen that? The Independence ranking is very high.
You did show me it, Glenn. Yeah. Bizarre.
Shocking.
where did it have Skyfall? Can you remember?
Skyfall was about, I think, 15 or 16. And Quantum of Scott Palace was in the top 5.
Yeah.
What?
I think so. I need a check.
That's just to be controversial, if it is, I think. I mean, I'll defend it. It is in no way a top 5, Bob. Oh dear!
Dare I say, did they put it higher?
But than
Service? I can't remember. I need to check that.
Oh, I don't look now, Glenn. That's so.
I'm going to check it again. I think it's higher than on a magazine. I could be wrong.
Yeah. I mean, just for the record, Glenn, I hate Quantum of Solace. It's the worst film in the series. It's a dog turd of a film.
You need to see it again, John.
Sorry, mate.
Go in with really, really low expectations.
When we get to the review and I have to critically analyse it, I might come out thinking a bit differently of it. I don't know.
I think you're going to have to do it, John, because no one else seems to want to, I'm afraid. It might just be you and me.
Okay.
Totally depressed and it'll last about 20 minutes.
1v1.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll be the one defending.
Like the film, basically.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
And short. Oh, dear.
Yeah, so Skyfall, we had a 4-year gap. We're getting used to these huge gaps between films, aren't we? But you had Quantum of Solace, which sort of almost undid a lot of the rights of Casino Royale that put right from Dying of the Day. So then it was almost quite a big task to get Bond back in the good books. And therefore, Skyfall, it did go for that big, bold, brassy... it's not as traditional as you think, though, because you've got the storyline of Bond being depressed and going away. It doesn't... It's got the new Q, of course. Different. Yeah, it's got a different take on Q. It doesn't have many of the gadgets, of course.
The Bond goes to the redemption, I say.
It is, yeah. Yeah, well, there's only...
Yeah, Bond goes to the again. So, it is very different, very, very different.
Yeah. Severine is a sort of the nearest to a Bond girl for him. And because, of course, the Moneypenny's in it, isn't she, to sort of set her up. Moneypenny Begins. Because Casino Royale is very much Batman Begins, isn't it? And Skyfall, of course, we have Glenn in our review. Compared Skyfall a lot to The Dark Knight, particularly Silver, with the Joker. A lot of it is actually similar to The World Is Not Enough in terms of the MI6, M personal mission, going back to Scotland and all that.
And the family heritage and everything. Yeah, it's very similar. The World Is Not Enough is the motto, of course, of Bond's family, isn't it? World Is Not Enough.
I think that was part of with Spectre, it was like Skyfall set it up so well at the end. With all the elements in place, you'd have obviously the harrowing death of M, but you've got Ralph Fiennes as the new M. You've got Moneypenny there.
Yeah.
You've got Q, and Bond loves his job again. And then, oh great! Can we not just have a normal Bond film now? Can we not? Why does it have to be personal all the time? Just get some bad guy.
Yeah.
Get Blofeld in it. That's great. Use him a bit better. Don't need to have him as his brother.
Yeah.
Anyway, we've gone on about this so many times, but it's...
Yeah.
It's infuriating.
Yeah. Ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. I forgot that he was his brother, but I think I just wanted to shut that out completely.
Yeah.
I tried to shut it out deliberately.
Well, I'm hoping they do in no time.
Yeah, I think better forgotten.
Yeah,
let's hope. I reckon No Time to Die is going to be... pretty okay. It's not going to be as good as Skyfall, Casino Royale, but I've got high hopes.
Yeah, I think it'll be somewhere
as we wait.
Yeah, no, nowhere near as bad as Quantum and Spectre, but not as good as the other two from Craig. But hey ho, we just got to be thankful we've got a film, don't we? I'm slightly worried how long it's going to take before the next one because it's just getting longer and longer. And the old days, Connery was saying,
bring it out.
Yeah, well, is that what you do? Yeah.
It's called on Netflix or HBO. They've got to bloody stream it. That's what I say.
Chris was thinking you could stream it, but then put it on the cinema afterwards because people will still want to go when they're open, won't they?
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with Chris. I would pay at least 30 quid to go and see it online. Definitely. I would pay premium rate to go and see it online without a shadow of a doubt. And I'm sure you guys would as well. You probably would pay even more.
Oh, yeah. Well,
come on. It's the new James Bond.
And we've waited 6 years.
Even 50 quid. 50 quid I will pay. I will pay 50 quid.
This is like the auction in Octopussy, the Sotheby's auction. £30.
He had
to buy. £50, yeah. Any more?
£50.
Yeah. Sold to Glenn Stan.
Yeah, seeing an Octopussy, yeah.
Well, thank you, guys. This has been brilliant fun as ever. The music of James Bond is... almost as iconic as the films. And I think a lot of people who aren't into the films, say you aren't into action or spy thrillers and that, you'll know James Bond themes, inside the back of your head. You've mentioned Nobody Does It Better, Glenn. That's one of the ones that immediately comes to mind. There's so many. And even Skyfall, I was saying Skyfall's like, it won an Oscar, of course. It won a Grammy, Golden Globe, a Brit Award. And it's actually like the first really big hit on both sides of the Atlantic since Dying of the Day. But it might live longer in the memory, I think, even though I'm a big defender of the film and the song. But yeah, I think since, like you say, since Living Daylights and A View to a Kill, there's not been any absolutely massive hits Bond song, you could say. And Skyfall certainly was that. So it deserves credit for that. Thank you, guys. Thank you, Glenn. I'm sure we'll have you back on the podcast.
Thank you.
Absolutely loved it.
Thank you.
Take care. And keep listening to James Bond music.
Take care, indeed.
Yeah. And let's hope John Barry somehow is resurrected in some form. Not one of those holograms.
Resurrection.
Resurrection. No. Really, 007.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.